baby.
Stop. Right on.
As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Earl. How are you?
All right, man. Remember yesterday when I was getting off the air and you said, and you played the weather, and they said some horrific things?
Yeah, predicted. That's what I've been hearing.
So it was true.
Yeah, it's coming tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Let me see. Should I introduce you before you respond to that, sir?
I mean, the winter is coming.
it's Game of Thrones,
it's right?
It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy?
Yeah.
It's not going to let us go easily, huh?
No, that's right. We're not going to make this easy for you.
No, man. Look at it. It looks so beautiful outside.
They tease you a little bit, and then it comes back.
Oh, you mean the weather?
Yeah, this is Wisconsin weather. Get used to it, man.
Yeah, I mean, look at the sun. It's perfect. The sky as well. It's not exactly blue, but it looks for all the reason that it's a spring, nice spring day, which it is.
Mm-hmm.
But there'll be some changes.
Winter is coming. Did you ever watch Game of Thrones?
No.
Oh, see, that was a theme of Game of Thrones. Winter is coming was a very ominous threat of the people from the Northland coming, and it was zombies.
You know, I'm a strange guy when it comes to watching television. If it's not a 40s movie or a 50s movie or a 30s movie, I don't give them.
Well, so you
much
can wait 20 years and watch this.
Maybe 30 years.
30 years, yeah.
But anyway, Sandy, I was telling you that I'm going to be, the rest of my day is already planned.
Yeah, in fact, it sounds unbelievable. You said you were going to. Sounds like you're doing the decorations for, which is another thought, but for a prom?
Yeah, special ed prom at my alma mater, Washington High School. And we'll have about 250, 300 people. It's a big deal. It's a big event.
How many of those people are all special ed students?
Probably about 80%, 90% of them.
Uh-huh.
And they're not all students anymore. Many of them have aged out. But they come back to this prom every year. Their dress.
How did it get started? How did you? Did you? Were you involved with starting?
No, a good friend, teacher at the school who's since passed an untimely death, created this, and he's an art instructor, Michael. Man, I feel bad that I can't remember his name right now. But he and I used to have all kind of conversations when I was working over at my alma mater, and he had came up with this idea for special ed. He was a special ed teacher.
Well, what special ed students before that would be included in regular prom?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so what happens during the regular prom is special ed students kind of go into a corner, and they. So I think sometimes, Sandy, we as quote-unquote normal people, right?
Yeah.
So-called normal people.
Right.
Kind of intimidate people who have disabilities. And I think what we do sometimes, Sandy, is assume that because somebody has disabilities that they can't understand when they're being discriminated against in a way, shape, or form, right? And it sometimes people can be cruel.
Yeah, well, it sounds like what you've described is, at the regular prom, these kids felt like they were different and not part of it. And at this prom, they really are.
It's their prom.
It's their prom, and they live it, feel it.
Oh, man, you ought to see them.
Celebrate it, experience it.
You ought to see them when they come in. Man, they're dressed to the nines, right?
Yeah.
Parents got them really dressed up, really nice. We've got volunteers from Milwaukee Public Schools administrations who have retired, and they come back to women every year, and they bring prom dresses.
And you said that some people from the MPS are involved with setting up the decorations for it?
Well, yes. Some of the art instructors and special ed instructors across the district. This is a district-wide prom. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and adults come who are disabled.
And it's so, how's it financed? Is it?
Well, it's financed by a family out of Florida that funds it in perpetuity, man. It's an amazing, amazing, tear-jerking event that I am honored to be just a little part of every year.
Yeah.
And, I do a lot of different things, Sandy, as you well know. I'm involved in a lot of different things, but none that I get more out of than this particular one. Because, you know, the kids, there's a catered meal, 7-course meal.
Wow.
That we used to have a caterer do, and once my alma mater became a culinary arts school, thought it made sense to have the culinary arts students. So they produced the meal. And you know, the other part of it is we allow disabled adults who don't have any affiliation at all to come. And then you got families, and then there are women there who do the hair and the makeup, and they have a ball. You know, women are a little bit different than us. And,
yeah, they are.
And so something like this, man, they're just, you know, we men could never think of or get involved in that part of it like the women do, and they really go the extra mile. So it's a wonderful, wonderful time. I'll be there from about 12:30 to about 10 p.m. I always crawl out of there, right?
well, here's to you, really.
And what is that, Bud?
Who was that's a Bud, I think.
Yeah. But yeah, man, it's not just me.
No, I know. I mean, this sounds like it. I you know, when you told me about it, I said, we got to talk about this, because this sounds like this is really a very good feel-good story. And it's about MPS, and it's about a bunch of people volunteering, and it's, you know, it's... People ought to understand all the good things that go on. We read about problems, but we ought to understand there's lots of good.
Well, Sandy, I would have never came on the air and talked about this had you not, you know, asked me to do it. But, you know, once I started talking about it, I almost can't stop talking about it because it's such a tear-jerking event. Mm-hmm. And but anyway, Sandy, you know, we don't often talk about it, but the Bucks. Man, the Bucks.
Real deal.
It took you a little while, right?
It did. You know, you and I would sat at a game and we talked about how stationary their offense was. But more recently, some of their additions, Joe Ingles, fantastic passer. When he's in there, the ball moves around quickly, you know. And you can tell that they're getting ready for the playoffs. And hopefully... they'll figure out, and Giannis will figure out just how to mesh in the best possible way. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes when he takes over a game, some of the games he's most taken over are the ones that we've lost, actually. So I hope that they continue to play as they are, which is broad team play.
They're the favorite to win the championship.
Yeah.
That's a lot to say.
I know. And that there's some very good teams out there. Well, you know, I have to hand it to Budenholzer. They've been very careful with minutes on their players. They've taken injuries and treated them all as if they're relatively serious, so that looks like they're heading into the playoffs with knock on wood. I don't want to jinx them, but they look like they're going to be a very healthy team, therefore formidable. And a lot of their competition is now suffering injuries or finding guys that are, you know, not.
No, well, Sandy, no team is deeper.
Right.
The Bucks have the deepest roster in the NBA. And Budenholzer normally plays 8 people during the playoffs. That's not going to be the case this time around.
No, I think he's going to have 10 at least.
Yeah.
He's got 2 full rotations he'll play, and he'll even have some special guys that he can bring in for instance, particular defensive needs. Wes Matthews is a tremendous defensive player, and they'll use him once in a while.
He may not even get much time at all.
He's dried up because I think Crowder has sort of supplanted him as the defensive guy.
The other part of all this, Sandy, is It's a pretty bold statement with all the great teams, you know, to say that the Bucks are the favorite. It's a hard thing for me to say.
Yeah.
But, and I would never say it, but
yeah,
they are.
Well, you know, and the other thing is most
and they're going to have home court advantage.
Most of the great teams have multiple guys that you look at are big names, right?
Right.
We have one big name. Yes, Holiday is really good, but he's not
a big name.
Not a big name.
Middleton's not a big name. No.
Ingles, all these guys, they've done a very good job of filling out a roster that's very good without having it be a bunch of competing stars.
Well, and the other part of it, Sandy, in the end is they're going to have to win now because this is not going to be their roster next year. There's no way they can hold many of the guys that they have because they're in the season, their final season before their contracts. And so Ingles, you're not going to be able to.
I think they'll keep Ingles.
Well, they got to figure out where the money is going to come from because three guys.
You know what they've done adroitly is they've got a bunch of guys who are relatively old who aren't going to command big money from other people. I don't know if Portis is in his last year, but he's a guy. No, extended.
He just signed a contract.
Yeah. So because he's a guy that has a lot of value, I think.
Well, and I'd also say this, Sandy, that Middleton is up for contract again. So the three guys, Middleton, Holiday, and Giannis, make up about 70% of the
scoring.
Not just scoring, but the.
Oh, the cont. The salary, the payroll. Yeah. Yes, I know. And so I'm figuring. Well, who knows? I talked through my hat. But Middleton, I suspect they figured out ways almost all season to get along without Middleton.
Right.
And I think if push came to shove, and he was going to be too expensive.
We've got to go to a break. We got a lot to talk about. We'll do that on the other side. It's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. And Sandy, I'm confident that it's Friday. And not Monday.
Yeah.
All right.
Talk through my hat. You know, that's something my dad used to talk about.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday.
good job.
So my co-host Sandy Williams is here. And Sandy, man, help me out with this, man. From rockets to ball bearings. Pentagon struggles to feed war machine.
I know.
Why are we?
You said that's the headline in the New York Times.
Yeah,
right?
New York Times.
Yeah. I mean, the war machine. What is Willy Wonka? It's not a chocolate factory. It's Willy Wonka and the war machine. I mean, the fact that we talk and the New York Times talks about our military industrial process as a war machine and the fact that here we are involved internationally. We have a budget of $850 billion a year for our defense budget.
And growing.
And we talk about not having enough capacity in our war machine. Our war machine, if that's certainly what our defense budget represents, is like 10 times bigger than anyone else's war machine, but it isn't big enough.
So our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Does it bother you that, as Sandy just stated, 10 times larger.
Well, I don't know. I think the proper number is. I think we spend as much as the next 9 countries combined.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, so I don't know how that works out.
Well, but do you think that makes sense, that's a good idea?
Well, you know what? It isn't a good idea in my book, okay?
Well, mine either.
The reason, and how I get here, is as much about our domestic affairs as it is about our international affairs. I think we've been all wet internationally, and the mistakes we've made, plotting, plodding, all around the world, making big mistakes, and meanwhile, sucking money out of the domestic capacity we have to solve our domestic problems.
You know, Sandy, the flow of arms to Ukraine has exposed a worrisome lack of production capacity in the United States that has its roots in the end of the Cold War. Oh, so we made a mistake.
Ending the Cold War.
Yes, that's what they're saying.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess what they're saying is we need to be on a war footing all the time. Now, are we on a war footing because we think America's going to get attacked? No, we have to be on a war footing so that we're prepared to insert ourselves into situations all around the world that might have a huge demand for our weaponry. So,
Sandy, I don't understand why the American people don't push back. We just saw 20 years in Iraq, 20 years ago, we attacked a nation based on a lie, and 280,000 Iraqis or more were killed. That nation is destabilized. We're not doing anything to help restabilize it. Whether or not we like Saddam Hussein or not, it didn't warrant killing one man, did not warrant totally destabilizing that entire nation.
Well, and if you read the story about how we destabilized it, how we purposefully got rid of the Ba'ath Party, you know, we went in, got rid of the military, all of the things that could possibly be a problem for a new government that we might install.
Right.
You know, we put Paul Bremer in to be the temporary.
Forgot about him.
Yeah, he had no knowledge at all about Iraq, and he's like the Douglas MacArthur of Japan. He's there to occupy Iraq while we transition it to a government, and in the process of transitioning it, we took out its entire governmental infrastructure, which made it absolutely likely that it would create a vacuum with no government, and that's what's happened.
And I don't know, Sandy, if the American people don't know that that's what occurred, or if, worse yet, don't care. And so if we look at it from that perspective, Sandy, and we aren't going to care, then that's what will lead us into what we are talking about with China.
Well, I'm afraid that Americans are unwilling to do a lessons learned analysis. We seem to completely believe in might makes right. And if we exercise our might, we were right to do it regardless of the outcome, regardless of Vietnam, regardless of Afghanistan, regardless of Iraq, the regardless list is much longer than I just recited, but we don't go back and evaluate it. We don't go back and gnash our teeth and say, wow, we made a mistake, let's not do that again. No, we just keep doing it again.
And the American people don't say anything about it. It's almost like, well, it's the Pentagon, it's the military. They can do whatever they want to do. We're fine with that because we're the American military. We support our military. And that's all. And so we somehow think saying we support our military, Sandy, is the end of it.
Yeah, there is. I have some hope about that. I'm reading a book right now by a guy named Philip Bump called Aftermath. He's a reporter from the Washington Post. One of my sons clued me into this book. It's all about the baby boom, and it's all factual. It's all based on polls that were done over the years as well as just plain factual data. And one thing that is happening is that we, the baby boom group, was by far the biggest population bulge. We're working our way through the snake, and we are the ones who believe in the Cold War. We are the ones who lived through the Cold War.
Right.
We are the ones who believe in military expenditures. And happily, the generations after us are beginning to ask more questions.
All right, listen, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. Sandy Williams is in the studio. It's Friday. We'll be right back. Unfortunately, we have to do radio right now. All right, okay. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. And, you know, Sandy, I just, it's not that we're anti-American. I think what you say is 100% correct. What you're saying is 100% correct. It's our generation.
Yeah, the boomers. You know,
we're the ones at the root of this.
Yeah, I mean, we lived through the Cold War, and we drank the Kool-Aid during that time, and we are super patriots. We are the generation that basically brought Donald Trump into office and support him. If you look at all the demographic data about it. And it's generations after us that hopefully will start asking questions and start. And it's not unpatriotic to be patriotic about trying to improve America and get us, make sure we're on the right track and not on the wrong track. Because I currently believe we're on the wrong track. I think we're on the wrong track internationally, and I think we're on the wrong track domestically.
So let me read a couple paragraphs. His open frustration reflects a problem that has become worryingly apparent as the Pentagon dispatches its own stocks of weapons to help Ukraine hold off Russia, and Washington rarely watches for signs that China might provoke a new conflict by invading Taiwan. Let's stop there. China invoking a new conflict by invading Taiwan. Therefore, we must ramp up our military production because if China, we have to ramp up because China might. I mean, no. These are the things. The United States lacks the capacity to produce the arms that the nation and its allies need. And its allies need at a time of heightened superpower tensions.
Well, you know,
last one.
Yeah.
Industry consolidation, depleted manufacturing lines, and supply chain issues have combined to constrain the production of basic ammunition like artillery shells, while also prompting concern about building adequate reserves of more sophisticated weapons, including missiles, air defense systems, and counter-artillery radar. Sandy, what that says to me is they're going to spend even more money on defense.
Well, what have we been spending $850 billion a year on, or in today's dollars, $850 billion? I mean, this sounds like a scandal to me. If we can't have an adequate military for our needs at the current level of expenditure, then what in the world are we doing? And what is our needs? You know, the our needs part is what needs to be questioned and analyzed. You know, we're backing into this situation in Taiwan without a public debate about it. We had a public debate in 1979. Our Congress adopted a one-China policy. Ever since then, we've been waffling on it because it makes good domestic politics to beat our breasts vis-a-vis China, and ever since China's become an economic success, we've suddenly decided to beat our breasts much more vehemently about it. But this is like backing into a very serious cactus, And the more we talk about building up our military because of Taiwan and China, the more likely it is that China might do something about Taiwan. The more we arm Taiwan to put it in a position that might erode the one China policy that China asserts as being so fundamentally important, and you can understand why, the more likely it is that this problem will occur. So are we not playing a role in provoking it? I would say we're playing a definite role in provoking it, and we ought to examine this before we actually accomplish the provocation.
You just, the sentence I just wrote, you just, you know, took it out of my mouth. So let me, why don't we have the discussion before these things happen? You know, once and if we wind up in this kerfuffle with China, why not, as Americans, have the discussion before, right? I mean, once it kicks off, it's too late.
Well, we've made it partisan politics, okay, and we've made it political so that, you know, beating your breast and being machismo about our military is good for liberals, too, because it sort of gives right. them credentials to say, hey, I'm not soft. I'm not a soft person. I'm just happen to be have liberal views on civil liberties and domestic policies, but I am a tough guy internationally. And so Nancy Pelosi goes to Taiwan to prove this.
Right.
And Kevin McCarthy has to go there to prove that he's just as good as Nancy Pelosi about this kind of toughness. And what we're doing is we're backing into this policy. And clearly all of those steps are designed to be provocative. I mean, you only do that as a display of bravado vis-a-vis China. And we have these joint military exercises that are designed to demonstrate our bravado vis-a-vis China. You know, like I've said repeatedly, we're yin and China is yang, you know, and the things we do definitely have an effect and a counter effect from China, and we have to recognize that before we do the thing that creates the counter effect, we ought to talk about it.
You know, Sandy, my worst fear is that even the listening audience has grown fatigued at us having the conversation. But I can tell you we're never going to stop talking about it because it's not happened. We can maybe deter our nation, as Tom always says, we the people. If we the people rise up and challenge our government and say, listen, we're not looking to get into a war with China. We don't need that.
Yeah.
Why do we need that? And yet the people who are listening to us aren't even giving it, I can't say they aren't giving it a thought. But maybe they don't think about it as much as you and I, Sandy. Maybe they think there's nothing they can do, and maybe they're buying into this. China's going to invade Taiwan, and where are they going next? Or Russia, after they're finished with Ukraine, who are they going to next?
Well, what do they think they're going to do? That's the, you know, this, there was an Australian premier that was on, and he was asked about whether they thought China was going to invade, you know, don't you think China might invade Australia? He said, no, I don't. He said, why do you think that? He said, because I have a brain and I use it. Why would they invade Australia? Absolutely. That's a very good
point. But that's
point.
What's being tossed out.
Right.
And the American people are saying that too. Well, yeah, they're going to go to Australia. I mean, come on, man. You know, and you don't, and I'm not condemning the listeners or Americans who really don't want to think about what can happen. But shouldn't we? You have to think about what could happen, right?
No, we were raised, our generation, our boomer generation, with the Cold War. We were raised with the prospect of Russia potentially invading the United States. Movies were made about it.
Right.
Red Dawn, I think.
Right.
Others. And so we have this foolish concept of what might happen out there in the war. Foolish only because, like the Australian premier, we ought to have a brain. We ought to ask ourselves, why in the world would they do that? How in the world would they do it? How could they possibly do it? And so this New York Times headline that talks about our war machine, all they're really talking about is our capacity to build munitions for other people's wars.
Yes.
So we can feed the Ukrainian war. So we can feed Taiwan with weapons. That's our war machine. I mean, you know, our war machine, I guess, ends up being the production of munitions for other people, which is, in fact, the way we were involved with World War I for a long time. And then in World War II, we played a big role in the same fashion.
But, well, you know, Sandy, it, to me, is so frightening. It's so frightening to me because, you know, what's going to happen down the road is again, the young people whose lives are in the balance on all of these things, and the fact that those people, Sandy, will not, their futures are going to be affected.
I had a startling lesson from someone, a woman whose family owned a textile mill in New Hampshire, and went and visited there, talked to them about the mill, what was the history. Well, the mill had begun to really thrive during the Civil War because they made military uniforms, and they thrived again during World War. It turns out that the range of things that supply our war machine are not just munitions. It reaches as deeply as our textile industry, our shoe industry, places that are making all the things that military use. So we all ought to understand that this military impact on our economy, the military-industrial complex, is a huge behemoth, and this behemoth ought to be examined. We ought to evaluate our economy because we ought not to want to have an economy that is dependent upon hostility.
So Sandy, you just keep hearing, here's another one, today's Wall Street Journal, Iran could produce nuclear weapons in several months if it decides to, according to General Mark Milley. Yes, it's going to decide to build nuclear weapons, as many other nations on Earth have decided to do it. How long have we been debating and arguing? And even President Joe Biden himself has said Iran is not going to be able to have nuclear weapons. Well, he said this over and over and over. We're not going to allow it. So we continue to build up our military.
Well, and the fact is that nuclear weapons for almost every country is viewed by them as the equalizer. It's the concealed weapon they can carry in their pocket to keep themselves from being attacked or to being robbed of their independence, right? So the United States has nuclear weapons. Russia has nuclear weapons. Russia, we clearly have a stronger military than Russia, but Russia can at least fall back on the notion that they have nuclear weapons, and if we decide to put Russia's existence in peril, they'll use their nuclear weapons. We understand that. Well, if someone decides to put Israel's existence in peril, they will use their nuclear weapons, and everyone understands that's their ultimate defense. The fact is, every country would like to have at least in their pocket the concealed weapon that is the nuclear weapon that keeps them from being subjected to abusive control by a third party.
All right, Steve from Green Bay, quickly. Good morning. You say what, sir?
I just want to quickly say, Errol, all the infighting that's happening in this country and the division of this country also is not helping. Other countries want us to be fighting with each other because then we're not focusing on what they're doing. And so I think it's kind of playing into their hand a little bit that we're arguing with ourselves over here in our country.
You know, you said that we are concerned about what they're doing. You know, I don't think that most American people are really concerned about what's going on in these other nations because our nation is in enough upheaval itself. And so, you know, we are more concerned about what's happening in those nations than they are about what's happening in ours.
Well, I think what Steve's talking about, though, is the notion that someone like Russia or China would be looking at our political infighting and seeing it as basically
a weakness,
instability,
right,
disequilibrium, keeping us off our feet. The fact is that we toy with other nations in the same fashion, try to promote the same kind of instability. I think it would be best if we all just pulled our horns in, and if it's okay to have spying and surveillance, but the idea of tinkering in other people's business in their affairs. I heard the the ex-president of Pakistan on the radio talking about how he thought the CIA had participated in the coup against him. I just think America ought to play in its own sandbox.
Yeah, that's a great point, Sandy. Hey, Steve, we got to go. Thank you very much for the call. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Show, as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. So Sandy, Janet Yellen has kind of blurred the lines on what's happening with bank deposits. And, you know, early on in this process, Sandy, I remember asking you some questions, and nobody can predict what the end result of any of these things are going to be, right? I mean, and you said you didn't think there was going to be a big, you know, deal with all these banks and destabilizing things. Have you changed your...
Well, I thought that the original action taken by the Fed with respect to the Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, and Republic Bank was that they were going to cover deposits of all sizes in those banks. And they did it based on an emergency authority that they have, the Fed has, to say, okay, there's an emergency, so we're going to expand the coverage of FDIC coverage to all deposits. I thought in the instance where they said that, they were doing it for all deposits. I also said at the same time that if they were going to do that, they needed to immediately move for a much more comprehensive sort of regulation of the banks to make sure that the banks didn't use that protection as a basis for now exercising riskier behavior in chasing profits. There was criticism aimed at the administration by some who said, look, this is now bailing out banks. It's going to create riskier behavior on the part of banks. This shouldn't be an across-the-board promise. So Janet Yellen came forward and said, no, it's not an across-the-board promise. We're going to continue to do this on a bank-by-bank, situation-by-situation basis. And if we decide that there is a potential emergency, we will exercise this bigger right. Okay, so that creates, however, the possibility in some people's minds that maybe my bank won't get this extra protection. So maybe with respect to my deposits in my bank, I ought to spread them out so that I don't have more than $250,000 in any bank because I won't be insured. So the process of that for these, there are numbers of banks in the country that have 50, 60, even 70% of their deposits are bigger than the insured $250,000 amount. So those banks in such a circumstance could be subject to having the depositors break their deposit up into a whole bunch of $250,000 pieces, move them around to a bunch of banks, and these banks that have a disproportionate amount of uninsured deposits would end up, like musical chairs, having much smaller deposits, i.e. a run of sorts on that bank. And so that has been the source of this concern about regional banks. My hope is that they'll start being immediate talk in Washington about, one, dealing with broadening this guarantee, but two, moving to much stronger regulations of banks, something much more like the Glass-Steagall Act, which was terrific insulation of our economy from bank problems.
So, Sandy, you're an economist, and so many of us who have not studied the economy, and the majority of us have not studied the economy, so we rely on guys like you, but it just doesn't seem to me, again, as a guy who's on the outside looking in, hearing this, in addition to trying to balance the inflation, issue and trying to make sure that there's money to keep the economy going and the government going.
Yep.
That's frightening to me. It's because, again, I've kind of seen...
Well, there is definite talk on Wall Street of trying to figure out whether these parallel problems of increasing interest rates to try and fight inflation, increasing inflation in sectors of our economy that are causing problems there, increasing interest rates that are causing problems for certain sectors of the economy, whether this will cause the sun, the moon, and the stars to line up that in a way that creates recession. And one of the areas that they're focused on is the real estate space. Real estate's very, very susceptible to interest rate moves, particularly commercial real estate. And if these regional banks, which are highly involved in commercial lending to commercial real estate, have to tighten their purse strings, reduce the amount of loans outstanding, increase the interest rates, because interest rates are going up, so the loans to these people will become stiffer, business there becomes much more difficult. And people who are old enough to remember, in the 1970s, the recession we had then was a real estate collapse-driven recession, and the real estate collapse was driven by high interest rates and a lack of access to loans. And so I think there will be an increasing focus on the real estate economy, residential housing to some extent, commercial real estate to even a greater extent. The other thing about commercial real estate that has made it more fragile is the post-pandemic use of real estate has gone way down commercially, so that people who used to use lots of office space use less office space. And so the demand for office space generally has declined.
But the fear, Sandy, that I have is all of those things trickle down to the average person.
Yes.
Right? Who can least afford that?
Right. I mean, the real estate business is premised on business cycles, and those people are taught to gird their loins against the recession and to be smart about not overinvesting. And the people who get burnt are the people who weren't smart. And economists would say that's the way it's supposed to work. If you don't do it right, you're going to get penalized. But Tom, Dick, and Mary don't have any way to gird their loins against recession and a recession that might take their job.
You know, Sandy, again, as a guy who worked in a field that recessions put us out of work, I'm always leery of that. And so people who don't know of that this is coming.
Right.
And the fact that it's been so long, you know, since we had, you know, a recession. And so does it mean that because it's been so long since we had one, Sandy, that it's going to be severe if it comes because it has been so long?
Well, maybe. You know, my hope had been that the change in employment habits post-pandemic, there was decreasing layoffs because of the employers had learned that they couldn't afford to lay people off because they wouldn't be able to find them when they needed them again, that would help us in the direction of a soft landing. And I still think that it might have an impact. Workers are now, in the most recent polls, beginning to say they think they would have more difficulty finding an equivalent job if they were laid off, so they're more likely to stick where they are.
But, Sandy, doesn't that depend on, you know, what kind of work it is that people are dealing with? It's not the owners aren't going to take on that burden paying people for, you know, not working for a very long extended period of time.
No, I don't think they will pay anyone for not working, but I think they might spread work out amongst
3, maybe 4 days a week.
Well, or they might just keep more employees than they would normally need for the output, that kind of a thing. When we come back, there is some other stuff that's a bit worrisome. The accounting industry is noting some trends.
All right. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.